This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. In light of Earth Day being observed this week on Thursday, 22nd of April, today on the show, we're turning the spotlight on arguably the biggest challenge facing the survival of the planet, climate change. What is the state of play of the climate change debate on the international stage? I'm joined on the show by Hilary Chu, an independent consultant and researcher on climate change issues, who'll help us break down the who, what, where, and whys of climate change politics. Hilary, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This week, President Joe Biden is going to hold a summit to galvanize international support for climate change action. Now, former President Donald Trump took a step back from climate change efforts during his presidency, which arguably saw the U.S. losing its leadership position in this arena. What do you make of Biden's attempt to regain that leadership position through initiatives like this climate change summit?
Yeah, in his campaign, he has said that he will recommit United States if he's elected, if Democrats come into power. They will recommit to a Paris Agreement, which they did upon his inauguration. And then, well, we have to remember that before Trump pulled out of Paris Agreement, they are still a member of the UNFCCC. They just pulled out of the Paris Agreement. So we will see what they will bring in his invitation for his upcoming summit. He said that the U.S. will present their NDC, their new NDC. We have to see what is in their new NDC.
Very quickly, I'm going to spell out some of the acronyms that you just used. The UNFCCC refers to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is the parent treaty for all the agreements on climate change, from the Kyoto Protocol to the Paris Agreement. And NDC stands for?
NDC stands for Nationally Determined Contribution, and that is basically the climate action plan of a country that has signed up to a Paris Agreement.
Okay, so each country has their own NDC, which they promised to implement as part of the Paris Agreement.
Correct. We are in a very peculiar situation now. Mm-hmm. Paris Agreement is supposed to start, you know, all the NDCs are supposed to start from this year, 2021. But we are in a situation where the nuts and bolts of how to operationalize Paris Agreement has not been finalized yet. Yeah, it was supposed to be finalized last year, 2020. But because of COVID, COP26 was postponed. So the full tools, the toolbox to operationalize Paris Agreement has not been finalized. So that's the situation we are in now.
I see. So actually, the Paris Agreement was signed in 2015, right? So if NDCs are only supposed to begin implementation in 2021, that gave them about 5 years to get ready for that.
Yep. Because before Paris Agreement, there was another treaty that deals with emission, and that is the Kyoto Protocol. And Kyoto Protocol Phase 2 is from 2012 to 2020. And that is the treaty where the developed countries, which are the historical emitters, they are supposed to implement their emission reduction. So Paris Agreement brings in all the member states of UNFCCC, to cut emission. So it starts from 2021. And Malaysia, and like most countries, we have submitted a 10-year time frame NDC. The US has submitted a 5-year time frame. So that's why they are going to introduce their new NDC, because every 5 years before your NDC expired, you will have to present or communicate your next NDC to the world.
What do you think so far of the NDCs? Are there any countries that stand out in terms of what they've pledged to do?
I think with climate actions, there's one aspect that we have to bear in mind is the national circumstances. So country will do what they could possibly do, you know, looking at their national circumstances. You know, for example, a country like Singapore with limited land space, so they cannot go very ambitious with their mitigation, like setting up a lot of solar panels because they are limited by their land size. So that's what I meant by national circumstances. So I would say that because this is the first NDC and the first time that more than 130 countries in the developing world are submitting their NDC, so we have to look at it in a, for lack of a better word, in a more kind way, I guess. Mm-hmm. I have to look at whether they could implement this and, you know, what are what sort of challenges that they are having back home.
Mm-hmm. Could you maybe explain a little bit about that, Hillary, the fact that you say this is the first time developing countries are submitting NDCs? So under the previous arrangement, which is the Kyoto Protocol, developing countries had no responsibilities to curb emissions?
Correct. Under the Kyoto Protocol, developing countries do not have emission cuts target because the convention itself recognized that even though climate change is a common problem, everybody has a responsibility, every country here. But then it has to be differentiated because there is a group of countries that are historical emitters. They are the one that has industrialized, you know, since 1750. And they have pumped, they have saturated or almost completely saturated the atmosphere with this carbon. But yet we are facing this problem of climate change, global warming, and then the impact of global warming is going to be very disastrous for countries that are only starting to develop. So that's why the responsibility has to be differentiated. So that's why in under Kyoto Protocol, it's only the rich country that has industrialized and they have brought about climate change that has emission reduction target. So then that's why there was a lot of fight in this UNFCCC space in negotiation that the rich country felt that, you know, especially with the emerging economies like China and India, mm-hmm. that is quickly catching up in terms of emission. They felt that it is not fair that China and India and all these big economies, South Africa, Brazil, you know, mm-hmm. are left out from this emission cut responsibility. That's how we came up about with this Paris Agreement. So Paris Agreement was born in 2015.
So is there a general understanding that even though now developing countries have agreed to curb emissions to the best of their ability, there's still a sense that it is the richer developed countries that should be shouldering more of the emissions curbs?
Yes. In fact, that is also reflected in the Paris Agreement, that the developed world have to do more, not only in terms of mitigation, which is emission reduction, but also they have to provide the finance, the technology support to developing countries so that they can leapfrog and then they can develop their economies in a more sustainable manner.
And how would you assess the state of that kind of technology transfer and financial funding from developed countries at this moment? You know, are they doing as they say they would to help the developing countries?
Well, they have helped, but then the amount or the level of commitment is still not up to the level that developing country would like to see. Yeah. Technology transfer has been a particularly very difficult negotiation topic at this UNFCCC because of the issue of IPR, intellectual property rights, mm-hmm. of these renewable energy technologies. Developed country will never want to discuss IPR in technology transfer. That is a super red line for them. Mm-hmm. It has always been like that for many, many years, and it was very difficult to make any breakthrough. In terms of finance, they have promised to provide $100 billion by 2020, but the amount that we have seen is definitely not, it has not reached $100 billion by 2020.
Okay, so it's still slow on that front.
Yes.
Looking ahead to November then, when the annual meeting of the UNFCCC, known as the Conference of Parties, and as you said, this year it's COP26, what are your expectations for the outcome?
Well, there are several outstanding agenda items on the conference agenda that they need to clear that to allow Paris Agreement, the NDCs and all that to be implemented. That's why they urgently want to hold this meeting, even though that pandemic situation is still not very promising, right? There are several key issues. Finance is one of them. And then the transparency framework, because a member country, even though you pledge that you will do this in your NDC, you will be subjected to a process where you'll be assessed, your action will be assessed and analyzed. Mm-hmm. And that's the transparency framework. And then you have to report. And so, yeah. So it's all this reporting requirement, you know, the nitty-gritty of it that has to be cleared as well. And the other thing will be the Article 6 of Paris Agreement that touch on voluntary cooperation, because some countries may not be able to achieve their mitigation target just based on their action back home. That also bring in the concept of the net zero emission. You know, net zero emission means it's not zero emission, obviously, right? So it's net zero. That means you cannot achieve zero emission, but you are outsourcing part of your work, part of your effort. You know, you're going to get credit from another country to help you to achieve your emission target.
So it's like a global carbon market of sorts.
Yeah, that's closely tied to carbon trading.
It sounds like a lot of issues, Hillary. I don't see how this can all be solved in just one 12-day meeting.
Yeah, they have been discussing this since 2016, after the Paris COP in 2015. There are a lot of options on the table in the discussion of all these various topics. They just needed time, but because of the pandemic last year, they could not meet in person. But they have done some virtual meetings, so there are some progress. So whatever it is, I think they will have to sort this out by end of the year. Otherwise, the NDC cannot be implemented.
I'm speaking to Hillary Chu, an independent consultant and researcher on climate change issues. When we come back, we assess Malaysia's commitment towards climate change action. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Hello, I'm Shazana, and if you've just joined us, this is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. On the show today is Hillary Chu, an independent consultant and researcher on climate change issues. And that's what we're discussing today, ahead of Earth Day, which falls on Wednesday, 22nd April. Earlier, we were talking about broad expectations for the UN Climate Change Summit in November. And now, turning our attention closer to home, I want to backtrack to Biden's Earth Day Summit and the fact that Malaysia wasn't invited. It became somewhat of a political issue when some opposition leaders questioned the government why we hadn't been included when neighbors like Indonesia, Singapore, and Vietnam were. Do you think it's significant that we weren't called to the table?
Actually, I personally felt that this is making a mountain out of a molehill, to be honest, because Biden's summit is not the legitimate or the rightful place to discuss climate change, to discuss and to decide on the international governance on climate change. The rightful place is the UNFCCC.
Okay, so it doesn't really make a difference whether or not we are attending this Earth Summit or not. But it would have looked good, right, if we had been invited?
Well, it would have looked good, but then there's no such thing as free lunch. I think if you are invited to such a summit, they will extract some concession from you.
So, all right, moving on from there then. The government, however, didn't do itself any favours when it tried to explain to the public why Malaysia wasn't included. The statement by the Minister of Environment and Water said that Malaysia was not as vulnerable to climate change, among other things. And this comment really struck a chord with many in the public who objected to that. Do you think these comments give an indication of how the government actually views the issue of climate change? Which is to say they don't really see it as a priority.
To be fair to the government, I think, of course, they cannot say that that is not the rightful place and we are not hard up for a place at the table there. You know, the government cannot say that, right? So they will say that, oh, because we are not a highly vulnerable country, because that's one of the criteria, right, set by the Biden summit, or that's what they say, how they choose those countries, right, their selection criteria. Mm-hmm. But I think the government is, just on Monday, they had a roundtable discussion where CSO members, public, were able to participate in. So they have actually made a list of their action plan. And on top of that, we already have our NDC, right? So, and our NDC is 10 years. So now we're just waiting for the Paris Agreement rule books to be finalized so that the NDC plans can be implemented. All in all, I think the government is just trying to follow whatever they have planned. Of course, there will be issues in those plans, and they have to sort out those issues.
And speaking of Malaysia's plans then, maybe you can help us or go through some of the highlights of what Malaysia has promised in its NDC and how we plan to do that.
Well, basically in our NDC, we say that we will reduce our emission intensity by 45% from the 2005 level by 2030. That's from 2021 to 2030. And out of the 45% emission intensity of our GDP, 35% will be on our own. We will use our own resources, and 10% will have to come from international support. So this is where the finance discussion in UNFCCC is important, and to make sure that developed countries, as they promise, will contribute, make sure that they pay the 100 billion, and also after that, what is the funding level that they are going to give us.
Okay, so we will fund 35% of reductions, and then the remainder 10%, we are hoping for international support for that.
Correct.
So that's our target number, 45% reduction of emissions from 2005.
Emission intensity. It's not absolute emission cut. As I said earlier about the principle of the common but differentiated responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. So this is because we are still a developing country and we will still be emitting, right? But we promise what we will do is that for every unit of GDP that we produce, we will make sure that in this unit, we have implemented like energy efficiency measures, and then we have tried to use renewable energy in producing that one unit of GDP. So that's emission intensity. Absolute cut is for countries that has their historical emitters.
So in that sense, what do you see as the low-hanging fruit for Malaysia in order to achieve that target of reducing emission intensity?
Well, energy efficiency measures is definitely one low-hanging fruit we could do in buildings and in energy conservation, electrical appliances, the kind of measures. Mm-hmm. And the other low-hanging fruit will be in the forestry sector. As you have known, we still have more than 50% forest cover. Mm-hmm. And that is a substantial carbon sink. And to protect this carbon sink is already there. So you only need to have policy and commit to those policy that you will keep those 50% forest cover, or at least 50% forest cover.
Okay, that's the low-hanging fruit. That's something that can be easily done. What about in terms of broader policy measures? What do you think that the government should be looking at, which may take a little bit more time, but should be on the table when it comes to our emissions promises?
Yeah, I think that would be to transition from fossil fuel-based electricity generation to renewable energy, which they are already they have started to do since, I think, RMK 10. They already have a renewable energy target, and this target has been increasing. They could do better, I think, if there's more funding, clear signal that funding is coming. I think this is one area that will require international support, financial support as well, mm-hmm. and also the technical support. Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. So that's a long-term strategy that needs to be thought out. So let's talk a little bit philosophically in a way. On the issue of climate change, I mean, one of the problems with creating awareness about climate change is that the consequences aren't immediate. It's unlike the COVID-19 pandemic, maybe, where we can see what happens if the virus spread grows out of control. With climate change, it's a lot more gradual. You know, we may not see the major consequences until 5-10 years later. So it's hard to create that sense of urgency sometimes. What do you think is a successful strategy to tackle this? How do we get the message across that climate change is important and we need to take action?
I think if you're talking about the government, I think the government knows how important it is. Otherwise, they would not be participating in this UNFCCC and they wouldn't have signed up to this treaty. Well, of course, always the issue of how much they are doing back home and how much of internalization of that and how much of that is translated into policies. But we do see that we have policy, and the Monday roundtable discussion, they did mention that they are going to review our first climate change policy that was launched in 2009. So if they are looking at that, I think that is a good sign. In terms of public awareness, I think that there's been quite a bit of public awareness, but I do find that there is a trend here where the narrative is very much influenced by the Western mainstream media that sometimes even gave inaccurate information that developing countries, the big emerging economies are not doing enough without putting the discussion in the right context. There is different responsibility between developed and developing countries. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the big problems, is the absence of the context of looking at the entire climate actions of different countries, you know, in the context of a common but differentiated responsibility. I do feel that what needs to be done is that I would like to see the government taking a more active role in communicating what the government is doing, in communicating, the politics in this international negotiation space to the public and to the CSO as well. Mm-hmm. Especially there, I see a lot of young activists. I mean, they are really gung-ho on this issue. Mm-hmm. They're really concerned, understandably, because they will most likely, if we don't get this right, we don't solve this problem, they will be the generation that will have to bear the brunt of climate change impacts.
So there definitely needs to be continuous engagement, more communication efforts like the roundtable that was held last Monday. And it's only if all stakeholders work together that we can actually make any inroads towards climate change mitigation. Mm. Hillary, thank you so much for sharing your insights. And we'll keep in touch and catch up with you later in the year as COP26 comes round. I've been speaking to Hillary Chu, independent consultant and researcher on climate change issues. If you're interested in more conversations on climate change and the environment, tune in to BFM 89.9 on Thursday, 22nd of April. We'll have a host of programs throughout the day to mark Earth Day. That's all for Pressing Matters on the Morning Run today. Coming up next is the 10 a.m. news bulletin, and then Enterprise will take you through the rest of the morning. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.